This Sedra Korach, Rashi says, Parsha Zu Yofen Nidreshes. This parsha is beautifully expounded in the Medrash. Some say, tongue in cheek, that every parsha you can expound it in that week, but other weeks in the year it's irrelevant. But this parsha has to do with machlokes, it's relevant every week. So it's yofen nidreshes. You can always say drushes on this parsha and it'll be relevant. Others say that you'll always find people to give all kinds of drushes to justify machlokes. Right? The people who were involved in machlokes, it says that machlokes l'shem shamayim, sofo l'iskayim. A machlokes l'shem shamayim in the end will persevere, and a machlokes shelo l'shem shamayim ain sofo l'iskayim, will not persevere, will not be around. And some say again, tongue in cheek, that if it's a machlokes that people realize is not l'shem shamayim, there's a chance that it'll end. But if people think it's l'shem shamayim, it'll never end, because everybody thinks that they're justified. There is a prohibition, according to some Rishonim, that lo yiye kekorach v'chol adosa, that there's a negative prohibition of the Torah not to be like Korach, not to embroil oneself in machlokas. Stay away from arguments, strife, or whatever. It also says, ubnei Korach lo mesu. The children of Korach haven't died. They're around in every generation. There are always people like Korach that are ready to make machlokas. So Klal Yisrael is not a stranger to machlokas, unfortunately. It's not only Jews, though. Goyim also fight. I remember that there was a terrible machlokas in a shul in Cleveland years and years ago. The Rav had died, and there were people who didn't like him when he was alive, and they were against his son taking over his position, and there were people who were very much, you know, chassidim of the Rav, and they wanted his son to take over, and it became very ugly, to the point where there were fist fights in shul on Shabbos, where if somebody got an aliyah from the other side, the women up in the women's balcony would throw things down on him, and not candy. They had to hire an armed policeman to stand in the shul to avoid what's it called, people getting harmed with fist fights. Ad kedei kach. This is real. This was during that time, it was such a chilul Hashem. Yeah. But during that time, I remember seeing in the Cleveland Plain Dealer an article about a Presbyterian church where there was an argument about the minister, and some of the congregants forcefully threw him out of the church on Sunday, and other ones beat those other ones up. And I said, Baruch Hashem, the Rabban Hashem wanted to make sure that nobody thinks it's only Jews. Goyim could also compete. So this parsha is very relevant, machlokas. The machlokas, there's two kinds of machlokas. There's machlokas l'shem shamayim, and there's machlokas shelo l'shem shamayim. What does that mean? It's not just in if you have good intentions or not. It's a much more substantial difference between... Machlokas is not necessarily a negative thing. Machlokas means that people argue, that you can argue, the Meiri says, you can argue against people or you can argue with them. What's the difference? The difference is, what is the goal? Is the goal that I want to win? That's machlokas shelo l'shem shamayim. That's machlokas because I want to be right. And then that kind of machlokas will never persevere because only one side can be right. So in the end, one side is going to win and one side is going to lose. But machlokas l'shem shamayim is, I'm not arguing against somebody else. It's, my intention is not to be right. My intention is to argue to find out what is right. And I don't really care if I'm right or I'm wrong. I just want to know what's right. So if you're right, and that's really what's proper, that's what I want. If I'm right, then that's what's proper. And I'll argue it out with you to ascertain what's right. So we're not arguing against each other. We're arguing with each other. We're arguing in order to come to what we both want is the truth. That machlokus will be resolved, meaning that both sides can win. Because I'm not arguing to be right, I'm arguing for what is right. Now, in the nature of this world, we've said this many times, is that everything has its place and no two things are the same. The perfection of the world is realized by a lot of different things uniting together and not things duplicating what other people are doing. God created different roles in this world. And in general, there's men, there's women, there's Kohanim, Levim, Yisraelim, Goyim, Jews. Everybody has their role to play in the world, and when everybody does their part properly in unity with all the other parts, that's when there's perfection in the world. No one thing could ever bring perfection to this world. Not in the physical world, not in the social world, not in the spiritual world. And we've mentioned that in the physical world, there's no one thing in this world that can do it all. Right? The nature is made of many, many different things, and only when all those things contribute their unique part can there be any kind of perfection in this world. Socially also. If everybody in this world would be doctors, we'd have a very healthy world, but who would take out the garbage? And if everybody were garbage men, we'd have a clean world, but who would take care of the sick? So you need doctors and lawyers and businessmen and garbage men and even rabbis and all these sundry things to be able to have a world that has some kind of perfection. Everybody doing their part. And God designated different roles to different things and different people or whatever, and that's called machlokus. Machlokus means there's divisions. There are roles to play in this world. But when everybody works together with their unique part, and even if they argue, but they're arguing together as to what is most proper, then that's perfection. That's called machlokas l'shem shemayim. Somebody, though, who wants to be right doesn't recognize that everybody has roles, that there are limitations for each person. So there are people who want to be everything. And they think there's nothing that stands in their way. It's not that God made roles in this world, but if you have enough money and enough wisdom and enough power, you can do whatever you want. You can be whatever you want. They don't accept the fact that even though there is equality in the world, but equality doesn't mean that everybody's the same. This is the problem with the feminist movement. It's a problem with many movements, where people don't recognize that the Rabbanu Shem created the world and different people have different roles to play. And if they do their role properly, then that's their perfection. They don't have to be somebody else. They just have to be what they can be as good as possible. That's what the world is all about. Korach felt that it's not God who gives out the roles. Who's a Kohen Gadol and who's a Levi and who's this and who's a Yisrael, right? You can do it if you have enough money, power, wisdom, whatever it may be, you can do whatever you want. It can be whatever you want. It's not true. You can be as good as you could possibly be within the limitations that God gave you. And those things have nothing to do with free choice. Right? Whether you were created a human being or an animal is not your free choice. That God decided. Whether you're a Jew or a non-Jew is not your free choice. Whether you're a man or a woman is not your free choice. Within the framework that the Rabbanu Shem gave you, you have to develop the role that the Rabbanu Shem meant for you. And there's a lot of leeway in there. A lot of leeway. But if you're not meant to be a Kohen, you're not a Kohen. You don't have to be a Kohen. And you can't be a Kohen. So that was Korach's mistake. When you think that it's not God who apportions out roles, and there's no idea of working together, it's every man for himself, then you're a Baal Machlokas. Then you want to fight with other people to win, because it's an adversary situation. It's not people working together, each one contributing their unique thing, but everybody has to vie with the other one to get what he can get, because everybody could do the same thing, and I want to do it. I don't want you to do it. That's what leads to machlokas. The opposite of machlokas is where people understand that in order to have a functioning society, people have to be part of the klal. They're not all. They're someach bechelko. Someach bechelko doesn't only mean that you're happy with your lot materially. Zeu osher, who's rich, someach bechelko. A person's happy with his lot. Happy with your lot means you're happy with your role to play in this world. You're not looking to be somebody else. You're happy being you. In fact, the prohibition of lo sachmot, of coveting somebody else, is predicated on understanding this idea that God apportions out roles in this world, and then there's no place for coveting. The Ibn Ezra asks, God can command you not to do things. Don't steal. Don't murder. How can he command you not to have a feeling that seems to be a natural feeling? You see somebody else has something, you want it. How could there be a mitzvah or a prohibition? Don't want it. If you have a prohibition, don't take it. Don't want it? It seems to be something you can't control. I see something nice somebody else has, I want it. So I've already transgressed the prohibition. How do I control that? Says the Ibn Ezra that if you have the right philosophy on life, then there's no problem. He says that if you realize that God apportions out roles in this world, it's like a play. You have your part. In order to fulfill your part, you need a costume. Not everybody has the same costume. Right? If you're the king, you have one kind of costume. If you're the court jester, you have a different costume. If you're the queen, you have a different costume. Right? You can't say that, well, I want the queen's costume, right, if you're supposed to be the king, unless there's something seriously wrong with you. Right? So you don't need the queen's costume. You're the king. You have the king's. If you're the court jester, you may have 10 props that if you're the king, you don't need any of them. You're given a costume when you come into this world. It's called your body. And you're given props. That's called your material possessions. And everybody's role in this world fits what they have. If you understand that, then there's no place for jealousy. Because jealousy is basically predicated on the fact that I think that what you have has connection to me. But if I realize it has no connection to me, then I don't want it. The example I always like to give is a doctor and a shoemaker who are neighbors. The doctor gets the state-of-the-art ultrasound equipment, and the shoemaker gets a state-of-the-art sewing machine. Do you think the doctor's going to be jealous of the shoemaker's sewing machine? What is he in the sewing machine for? He doesn't sew up his patients with a sewing machine. If he does, he's not going to be a doctor too long. And what is the shoemaker jealous of the doctor's ultrasound equipment? What does he need ultrasound equipment? He knows what's in his shoes, feet. So what does he need an ultrasound for? So the doctor and the shoemaker aren't going to be jealous of each other, because each one realizes it's not my role. I don't need that. It's not for me. But let another doctor get a better ultrasound machine and another shoemaker get a better sewing machine, then there's jealousy, because each one feels that I have a connection to that. It could be mine. But if you accept the philosophy that whatever anybody has is given to them by God to fulfill their role and has no connection to you, then there's no place for jealousy. So if you'd have the right philosophy on life, there wouldn't be a place of jealousy. Right? And that's why the whole Isra of Losach mode is that I'm not happy being me. I'm not happy with my role. I want somebody else's role. So somebody who doesn't accept this fact, that there are different roles, and the way that society exists is by people working together, doing their part, but not trying to be somebody else's part, that leads to jealousy, and that's what led Korach to be jealous of a role that he wasn't given, a minor role. And because of that, he blew this up to undermine the entire authority of Moshe Rabbeinu, the entire integrity of the Torah, and made it into a very, very serious argument, serious fight. And therefore, the parsha represents people who can't function within a community. They want to do it all themselves, or they don't want to have anything to do with the community. They just want to be on their own. Either they want to do everything, or they want to do nothing. They can't be a team worker, a team player. Right? They want to do everything on their own, or they want to be antisocial and not be involved socially, bichlal, with society. And I think in the names of Korach, there's a hint to various reasons why people don't want to be a team player, why they don't want to be part of a community, why they either want to do it all themselves or do nothing. The names, I think, symbolize some of these things. And then we'll see a mission in Pirkei Avos that says that maybe a little bit, gives some other ideas. Korach. The name Korach has a connection to the word Kereach. Kereach means bald. A person who feels he's bald, he doesn't have anything to contribute. There are people who don't become part of a society and don't contribute their part because they don't recognize what they have. They don't appreciate who they are. They only want to be somebody else. Again, that is jealousy. It's the foundation of losach mode. Right? Did it ever bother you how the Torah could use the same verb, losach mode, don't covet, eishes riecha, v'shoro, v'chamoro, v'chol asher riecha, don't covet your neighbor's wife or his donkey, l'cha'ora, it's not the same feeling, right? Wanting your neighbor's wife and wanting your neighbor's donkey, right? Unless there is something very bad about the wife or very good about the donkey or very sick about the guy, right? They can't be the same feeling. So how did the Torah group them together with the same verb? They're not the same feeling. Secondly, it says that each of the Ten Commandments, the first five and second five, correspond one to one. The first of the first five, the first of the second five. And it's beautiful until the last one. The first one is belief in God, don't murder. Man is created in God's image, so believing in God and not murdering human beings go together. Here you're diminishing God's image, and by not believing in God, you diminish God's image. By not murdering, you increase God's image. And by believing, you increase God's image. This is spiritual, this is physical. Next one is don't commit idolatry and don't commit adultery. Idolatry is spiritual adultery. A woman living with somebody who's not her husband is like the Jewish people living, what's it called, worshiping another god. So this is spiritual and this is physical, idolatry, adultery. Then there is don't steal and don't swear falsely. Right? Don't take God's name in vain and don't steal. So swearing in God's name to corroborate that you didn't steal go together. Usually people who steal try to prove it by swearing. So it goes together. Keep the Shabbos, don't bear false witness. Shabbos is testimony that God created the world. If you don't keep Shabbos, you're bearing false witness spiritually. And here is bearing false witness physically. It goes perfect. The last one is honor your father and mother, don't covet. What's the connection between honoring your father and mother and not being jealous of other people? Now the answer to both questions is, it says that rekev atzamos kina, that jealousy rots your bones. So you can understand that literally, that when a person is jealous of somebody else, it eats him up alive. But there's a deeper meaning. Bones, atzamos, is your essence. People are jealous of other people because they don't appreciate who they are. They don't think that everybody has their role in this world, and therefore I want to be you. I'm not happy being me. I want to be you. And therefore it rots your essence because you don't, it says what you want you won't get and what you have is taken away from you. It's not a punishment. It's a natural result. If you want to be somebody else, you'll never be somebody else. And what you have and what you are will atrophy because you won't focus in on it. So you lose what you have. And therefore, wanting somebody else's wife, his donkey, is all the same feeling. It's not because you want the wife for her merit or the donkey for its merit. You want it because it's his. I want to be him. And everything that he has, that's important. And what I have is not important. That's the foundation of jealousy. I'm not happy being me. Now, a person who's not happy being them can't possibly respect his parents because they made you. The greatest affront to your parents is not being happy who they made you. So, not honoring your parents and coveting go together. They're parallel. So, that's the first thing. Kereach, a person who thinks he's bald. Right? Or Korach can also mean ice, cold. He has nothing to contribute. He's a cold, bald, nothing. That's how he looks at himself. So he can't be part of a society. He has nothing to give. He only wants to be somebody else. So he is the first kind of person who can't be part of a tzibur, who memela, it says, vayikach kore, he took himself off to the side. I can't be part with other people. I have to argue against them because either I have to have it all for myself or nothing. That's the first problem, Korach. Then there's Yitzar. Yitzar is oil. Oil has a nature of rising to the surface. There are people who feel that they're too good for any society, right? The society is beneath them. It's beneath their dignity to have anything to do with the people around them because they are much, much greater. So either you can feel a nothing or you can feel too great. Both of those things prevent people from being part of society. In addition, Yitzar also represents not only that you're above everybody else, but you're separate. Oil and water can't mix. There are people in this world who are just antisocial. They don't want to have anything to do with other people. They don't like to be around other people. They just want to be separate to themselves. So that's the second problem of people not being part of a kehila, not being part of a society. Either they feel above everybody else, and therefore it would be demeaning to them to have anything to do with the tzibur, or they're just antisocial. They're just people who want to have nothing to do, they just want to be left alone. That's Yitzhar. Then there's kahas. The word kahas can have a connection to the word kihui. Kihui means something acidic, not chasidic, acidic. Acidic meaning bitter, pungent. Okay? There are people in this world who are very acidic. In other words, they're very critical. Nothing is ever good. All they can do is criticize. This one's no good and the other one's no good. And a person like that can't be part of a society because he's too critical. Nobody is good enough to want to have anything to do with them. They're all no good people. Everything they do, he criticizes. This one, they're stupid and they do idiotic things and, right? There are plenty of people like that around. As a rabbi, I've met almost all of them. And all they can do is complain. They can never do anything positive, never contribute anything positive, except they're ready there to criticize and tell what everybody else is doing wrong. So that's kahas. People like that, who are constantly overly critical, can't be productive members of a society, of a tzibur. And the last is levi. Levi means an escort. Levaya, to escort. There are people who are just plain lazy, right? They don't want to do any work. They want to benefit from the work everybody else does. They just want to escort, get a free ride, a tramp on other people's work. Let them do the work. I'll be very happy to benefit from what they do. But I'm not interested in putting in any effort. So those are some of the root causes for people who are bali machlokas, who can't realize that they have to work together with other people and not against them. Either you feel you have nothing to contribute, you don't have any self-esteem, self-respect, right? You don't have any motivation. That's Korach. Or you feel above everybody else, and you don't want to, it was demeaning to you to have shaykhs with these peasants, right? Or you're just antisocial. Third, you're too overly critical of people. Nothing is good. And lastly, you're lazy. You don't want to work. You're like, everybody else should do the work, and you'll benefit from the results. Then there's a Mishnah in Pirkei Avos that adds some new dimensions to this. The Mishnah says, Al Tifrosh Menat Zibor, Hillel Omer. Al Tifrosh Menat Zibor. Hillel said, you shouldn't separate yourself from the community. And then Hillel said four other things that don't seem to have any connection to the first or to each other. Al Tamin Ba'atzmecha Ad Yom Moscha. Don't believe in yourself or don't trust in yourself until you die. Nobody can be sure of themselves till they're no longer here. The altodnis chaver chashetod tagilim komo. Don't judge other people till you come to their place. The altomer aldover sheiyef shalishmoa shesofa lishama. Don't say on something that can't be heard. Eventually, it'll be heard. We'll explain that in a few seconds. And altomer, don't say lichesheef neeshne. When I have time, I'll learn. Shema lo sipana. Maybe you'll never have time. So the simple meaning is make time to learn. Don't wait till you have time, because maybe you won't have any time if you don't make the time. Those are the simple meanings of that Mishnah, and it seems to be five disjointed things, very nice things, but what are they doing in the same Mishnah? Therefore, I want to say that Hillel said one thing, Al tifrosh min hatzibur, do not separate yourself from the community. And then he answered four excuses that people have why they feel that they can't be part of the community. First excuse, I don't need a community. Communities are necessary for weak people who need peer pressure, who need a support group. I'm, Baruch Hashem, strong. I don't need peer pressure. I don't need a support group. I can do it on my own. On that, Hillel said, Al tamin ba'atzmecha ad yomos. Never be sure of yourself till you're no longer here. Nobody is strong enough to do it on his own. Everybody needs peer pressure to keep them on the straight and narrow, and everybody needs a support group. Don't think that you don't need it. Don't believe in yourself. Don't trust yourself until you're no longer here. Everybody needs support. Everybody needs peer pressure. That's not a good excuse. Second excuse people have. I would love to have to do with a community. I just haven't found a community that's fit to have anything to do with them. Every community that I'm familiar with are really rotten people. Right? This one's no good and the other one's no good or whatever. And on that Hillel said, you may be right, but don't judge somebody else till you get close up to them. Don't judge them from afar. Don't walk into a community and say, this community is a bunch of no good nicks and I don't have anything to do with them. How do you know? From what you see from afar? From afar, you could see a lot of negative things. Sometimes you look closer and you see the people aren't as bad as you thought, or they're worse than you thought. So get close first, deal with the community, and then make the decision whether it's a community that's worth having a connection to or not. Don't make that decision before you have a connection with the people. Don't judge people until you get close enough to be in their place. And when you do, you'll see that most of the people are not as bad as they look from afar. And sometimes people don't look as bad as they are from afar. But don't make that decision until you get close by. Third reason people don't want to have to do with communities. They say, you know, I tried it, and I tried to get involved with the community, and I always gave them tremendous advice and ideas, and they never listened to me. So why would I have anything to do with these idiots? Right? They never want to listen to good advice. Don't say, said Hillel, on something that can't be heard, that in the end it's going to be heard. Meaning, I'm always right. And what I have to say is really the best way to go. And these idiots don't realize that. But eventually they'll see that I was right. Don't say that, because maybe eventually they'll see that you're not right. Maybe everything you say isn't right. Maybe the reason they don't listen to you is because they have better ideas. Because what you're saying is not good. Don't think that whatever you say is obviously the 100% the best thing. And eventually people will come around and see it, and if they don't see it, now there's something wrong with them. So that can't be an excuse not to have to do with the community, that they never listen to me, because maybe they don't listen to you because what you're saying is wrong and somebody else is right. And the last reason is people say, I don't want to have to do with the community because it's a waste of time. Yeah, maybe it's an important thing, but I have more important things to do. I have family to worry about. I have my personal growth. Spiritually, I have my parnasa to worry about, right? I can't get involved with the community. And when I have time, because I'm not involved with the community, I'll learn. I'll do these important things. Why? Because everybody has a responsibility to give tzedakah. You can't say, well, if I give money away, I'm taking it away from things that I could use for important things. Yeah, but you have a responsibility to use your money partially for other people. Says Rav Moshe Feinstein, just like a person has to give miser from his money, he has to give miser from his time too. Time is also money. And just like you're responsible to give others from your money, you're responsible to give others from your time. And therefore, a person can't say, well, if I involve myself with the community, I'm taking valuable time away from what I could use for myself for good purposes. Spiritual, I could learn Torah. And everything else that's included in that. I could take care of my family. I could do my business, whatever it is. So I have no time for the community. Don't say, when I will have the time, because I'm not going to be involved with the community, I'll learn, Shemelosipano, do you think that God is going to let you benefit from time that you're stealing from the community? You owe the community time. And you're now going to steal that time away from the community and use it for yourself. Do you think God's going to let you benefit from that time? He's going to let you learn? He'll find other things to keep you busy, to waste your time. So those are four more excuses why people don't want to be involved in the community. Either because they don't think they don't need a community, which is wrong, or because they think that the community isn't fit for them to have anything to do with them, because they're terrible people, and that is also wrong. Don't judge people until you get close to them. Or because they feel that the community never listens to them and they're always right, so these people must be idiots. Don't think like that. And lastly, because you think that you're wasting your time dealing with the community because you have more important things to do, that you have responsibility also. So all of those reasons are reasons why people would not want to be part of the community. And then they're, if you're not part of the community, you're obviously a Baal Machlokas. You're separate, and then you're just argumentative. There's other reasons, though. Some people just don't like authority. They don't want to be part of the community because the community has rules, and there are authority figures like rabbis and Vad HaBayit or Vad Hanala or whatever it may be, the Vad, the whatever in every place has something. And therefore, I just like to ignore them. I don't want to hear people telling me what to do, right? I don't like rules. So there are people who are basically anarchists, who are against any kind of rules, any kind of criticism. They just want to do their own thing. That's also people who can't be part of a community. That's Dosan Vaviram. That's what Dosan Vaviram were. In addition, people who are jealous of other people, who can't accept that everybody has their role, and I'll do my role, you do your role. No, I want to do everybody's role. I'm not happy you do it. I want to do it. That's Korach. And then there are opportunists. People who feel that, if there's an argument, I could benefit from it because, you know, once there's discord, I can get what I couldn't get in a normal time. So people who take advantage of machlokas. They don't really start the machlokas. Those are the 250 people that wanted to be kohanim. They said, if Korach's already fighting, whatever, we could sneak in also and benefit from this. And then there's the last kind of person, is Om Ben Peles. Om Ben Peles is the nachschlepper. He has really no reason to get involved, right? He has nothing really to gain, but it's exciting. This is where the action is, right? He doesn't feel like he has anything important in his life altogether, so he attaches himself to people who are action people, right? This guy really has nothing to do with the machlokas. That's why his wife was able to save him. Korach's wife, women have a very pivotal part in machlokas. I've learned that also. That usually it's the women that either fan the flames of machlokas and make it much worse than it would be if it's just the men involved, or they have the soothing of stopping machlokas. Om Ben Peles saved her husband. She came home and he said, "Hey, it's big. We're fighting with Moshe Rabbeinu. Korach may be the Kohen Gadol, not Aaron." So he said, "Well, you idiot, what are you getting involved in this for? You're not going to get anything. If Korach wins, he becomes Kohen Gadol. If Aaron wins, he's Kohen Gadol. You remain Om Ben Peles one way or the other. Why are you getting involved in this?" She said, "Well, I gave him my word, you know." She said, "You're not going anywhere." She gave him wine, made him fall asleep, put him in his bed, and she went and dressed immodestly, because she knew these people are frum people. They're not going to, come near a woman who's dressed immodestly. She sat on the porch. And when they came to get him, to bring him to the machlokas, right, they walked away because they didn't want to come. And they're frum people, they're just fighting with Moshe Rabbeinu, but they're frum. So, and then when the earth opened up and he started to roll towards the opening out of the bed, his wife stood by the door and she said, "Rabban Shem, this isn't fair. I know that he himself didn't decide not to go, but I stopped him from going. Is this my reward?" And he stopped. She saved her husband's life. And Korach's wife, she, what's it called, fanned the flames. Korach came home and he said, "You should hear what happened today. Moshe Rabbeinu said that all the Levim have to shave themselves like babies from head to toe. And then they picked us up and waved us like a lulav. He said, Moshe's making a fool out of you. Right? He wants to see you meet a fool. He said, no, he did it himself too. He's also a lady. He said, yeah, he's willing to do it to himself just that you should look like a fool. She fanned the flames. Says, that's why a husband should not share with his wife the insults he gets during the day at work. For two reasons. One is, if every day he comes home and he says, this one called me an idiot today, and this one said I'm a fool, this one said I can't do anything right, eventually she's going to start to believe it. She's going to know, everybody can't be wrong, right? Like every day you come home and tell me this one said this, you know, she's going to begin to feel like that too. Secondly, the nature of people is, this is with children too, that's why you shouldn't get involved in children's fights. Because they forget about it in 2 minutes, but the parents can fight over it for the next 20 years. Right? Same thing. A husband goes to work, and he has a problem with this one or that one. By the next day, he has to work with them, whatever, it's forgotten, usually. But the wife, she's not involved on a regular basis, and her husband's insult is an insult to her, this is my husband. She takes it much more seriously. She doesn't have the connection where she's going to forget about it, and she makes it into a major thing, and better she shouldn't know about it. Right? It's going to pass by the next day. Same thing goes with children's fights. So Korach's wife fanned the fires, and she basically destroyed her husband. So women, I found, in, when it comes to machlokas, either if the women are a good thing, the machlokas will stop. And if the women are involved, forget it. It'll never stop. So that is the that's why Ong Ben Peles, his wife, is able to save him. Because he really had no business over here. He just wanted to be part of the action. So a good wife told him, you know, what's it called? It's ridiculous. You have nothing to do over here. Stay in bed and what's it called? I'll take care of the situation. And Korach's wife pushed her husband. He was jealous, and she made him even more jealous. Because she was jealous for his honor, because his honor is her honor. And she made more of it than it was. Those are some of the anatomy of machlokes, what causes it, and what the underlying causes of not wanting to be part of a functioning community is from the center. Okay. Yes?
Did I look at herself, she could actually speak,
Tasha? Yeah, I don't know if he spoke back. But she said, Rabbanu Shalom, right, this isn't fair. Right? I did everything in my power to stop him from going. True, he didn't make a conscious choice. But for my sake, and Rabbanu Shalom listened to him. She's like a tefillah.
So that means that at that time they were on a level?
Yeah, that doesn't necessarily mean that they could talk to the Rabbanu Shalom. You could talk to the Rabbanu Shalom too. It's called davening. Right, and sometimes the Rabbanu Shalom answers. Well, most of the time he answers. Sometimes he says yes, sometimes he says no, sometimes he says, I really don't want to get involved.
No, but this was instant, you could see it.
A woman like that obviously was on a very high level. She understood what great people didn't understand. So she saved her husband.